Chapter 16 Of Sam's private affairs, and of the firm of Bro and Hoff, we took a genteel house in Bernard Street, Russell Square, and my aunt sent for all her furniture from the country, which would have filled two such houses, but which came pretty cheap to us young housekeepers, as we had only to pay the carriage of the goods from Bristol. When I brought Mrs. H. her third half-year's dividend, having not for 4 months touched a shilling of her money, I must say she gave me 50 l. of the 80 l. and told me that was ample pay for the board, and lodging of a poor old woman like her, who did not eat more than a sparrow. I have myself, in the country, seen her eat 9 sparrows in a pudding, but she was rich, and I could not complain. If she saved 600 l. a year, at the least, by living with us, why, all the savings would one day come to me, and so Mary and I consoled ourselves, and tried to manage matters as well as we might. It was no easy task, to keep a mansion in Bernard Street, and save money out of 470 l. a year, which was my income. But what a lucky fellow I was to have such an income. As Mrs. Haggarty left the rookery in Smither's carriage, Mr. Bro, with his 4 greys, was entering the lodge gate, and I should like to have seen the looks of these 2 gentlemen, as the one was carrying the other's prey off, out of his own very den, under his very nose. He came to see her the next day, and protested that he would not leave the house until she left it with him. That he had heard of his daughter's infamous conduct, and had seen her in tears and tears, madam, and on her knees, imploring heaven to pardon her. But Mr. B. was obliged to leave the house without my aunt, who had a causa major for staying, and hardly allowed poor Mary out of her sight, opening every one of the letters that came into the house directed to my wife, and suspecting hers to everybody. Mary never told me of all this pain for many, many years afterwards, but had always a smiling face for her husband when he came home from his work. As for poor Gus, my aunt had so frightened him that he never once showed his nose in the place all the time we lived there, but used to be content with news of Mary, of whom he was as fond as he was of me. Mr. Bro, when my aunt left him, was in a furious ill humor with me. He found fault with me 10 times a day, and openly, before the gents of the office. But I let him one day know pretty smartly that I was not only a servant, but a considerable shareholder in the company, that I defied him to find fault with my work or my regularity, and that I was not minded to receive any insolent language from him or any man. He said it was always so. That he had never cherished a young man in his bosom, but the ingrate had turned on him, that he was accustomed to wrong and undutifulness from his children, and that he would pray that the sin might be forgiven me. A moment before he had been cursing and swearing at me, and speaking to me as if I had been his she-black. But, look you, I was not going to put up with any more of Madame Bro's airs, or of his. With me they might act as they thought fit. But I did not choose that my wife should be passed over by them, as she had been in the matter of the visit to Fulham. Bro ended by warning me of Hodge and Smithers. You are of these men, said he, but for my honesty, your aunt's landed property would have been sacrificed by these cormorants. And when, for her benefit with you, obstinate young man, will not perceive I wish to dispose of her land, her attorneys actually had the audacity the unchristian avarice I may say to ask 10% commission on the sale. There might be some truth in this, I thought. At any rate, when rogues fall out, honest men come by their own. And now I began to suspect, I am sorry to say, that both the attorney and the director had a little of the rogue in their composition. It was especially about my wife's fortune that Mr. B. showed his cloven foot. For proposing, as usual, that I should purchase shares with it in our company, I told him that my wife was a minor, and as such her little fortune was vested out of my control altogether. He flung away in a rage at this. And I soon saw that he did not care for me any more, by Abednego's manner to me. No more holidays, no more advances of money, had I. On the contrary, the private clerkship at 150L was abolished, and I found myself on my 250L. A year again. Well, what then? It was always a good income, and I did my duty, and laughed at the director. About this time, in the beginning of 1824, the Jamaica Ginger Beer Company shut up shop exploded, as Gus said, with a bang. The patent pump shares were down to 15L, upon a paid-up capital of 65L. Still ours were at a high premium, and the independent West Didlisex held its head up as proudly as any office in London. Roundhand's abuse had had some influence against the director, certainly, for he hinted at malversation of shares. But the company still stood as united as the hand in hand, and as firm as the rock. To return to the state of affairs in Bernard Street, Russell Square. My aunt's old furniture crammed our little rooms, and my aunt's enormous old jingling grand piano, with crooked legs and half the strings broken, occupied 3/4 of the little drawing room. Here used Mrs. H. to sit and play us, for hours, sonatas that were in fashion in Lord Cherylville's time, and sung with a cracked voice, till it was all that we could do to refrain from laughing. And it was queer to remark the change that had taken place in Mrs. Haggerty's character now. For whereas she was in the country among the topping persons of the village, and quite content with a tea party at 6, and a game of twopenny whist afterwards, in London she would never dine till 7, would have a fly from the mews, to drive in the park twice a week, cut and uncut, and ripped up and twisted over and over, all her old gowns, flounces, caps, and fowls, and kept my poor Mary from morning till night altering them to the present mode. Mrs. Haggerty, moreover, appeared in a new wig, and, I am sorry to say, turned out with such a pair of red cheeks as nature never gave her, and as made all the people in Bernard Street stare, where they are not as yet used to such fashions. Moreover, she insisted upon our establishing a servant in livery, a boy, that is, of about 16, who was dressed in one of the old liveries that she had brought with her from Somersetshire, decorated with new cuffs and collars, and new buttons. On the latter were represented the united crests of the Titmarshes and Haggertys, viz., a tomtit rampant and a hog in armor. I thought this livery and crest button rather absurd, I must confess, though my family is very ancient. And heavens, what a roar of laughter was raised in the office one day, when the little servant in the big livery, with the immense cane, walked in and brought me a message from Mrs. Haggerty of Castle Haggerty. Furthermore, all letters were delivered on a silver tray. If we had had a baby, I believe Aunt would have had it down on the tray. But there was as yet no foundation for Mr. Smither's insinuation upon that score, any more than for his other cowardly fabrication before narrated. Aunt and Mary used to walk gravely up and down the new road, with the boy following with his great gold-headed stick. But though there was all this ceremony and parade, and Aunt still talked of her acquaintances, we did not see a single person from week's end to week's end, and a more dismal house than ours could hardly be found in London town. On Sundays, Mrs. Haggerty used to go to St. Pancras Church, then just built, and as handsome as Covent Garden Theatre, and of evenings, to a meeting house of the Anabaptists. And that day, at least, Mary and I had to ourselves, for we chose to have seats at the Foundling, and heard the charming music there, and my wife used to look wistfully in the pretty children's faces, and so, for the matter of that, did one. It was not, however, till a year after our marriage, that she spoke in a way which shall be here passed over, but which filled both her and me with inexpressible joy. I remember as he had the news, to give me on the very day when the Muff and Tippet Company shut up, after swallowing a capital of 300,000L, as some said, and nothing to show for it except a treaty with some Indians, who had afterwards tomahawked the agent of the company. Some people said there were no Indians, and no agent to be tomahawked at all, but that the whole had been invented in a house in Crutched Friars. Well, I pitied poor Tid, whose 20,000 L were thus gone in a year, and whom I met in the city that day with a most ghastly face. He had 1,000 L of debts, he said, and talked of shooting himself, but he was only arrested, and passed a long time in the Fleet. Mary's delightful news, however, soon put Tid and the Muff and Tippet Company out of my head, as you may fancy. Other circumstances now occurred in the city of London which seemed to show that our director was what is not to be found in Johnson's dictionary rather shaky. Three of his companies had broken, four more were in a notoriously insolvent state, and even at the meetings of the directors of the West Didlisex, some stormy words passed, which ended in the retirement of several of the board. Friends of Mr. B.S. filled up their places. Mr. Puppet, Mr. Straw, Mr. Query, and other respectable gents, coming forward and joining the concern. Bro and off dissolved partnership, and Mr. B said he had quite enough to do to manage the one. W. D. and intended gradually to retire from the other affairs. Indeed, such an association as ours was enough work for any man, let alone the parliamentary duties which Bro was called on to perform, and the 72 lawsuits which burst upon him as principal director of the late companies. Perhaps I should here describe the desperate attempts made by Mrs. Haggarty to introduce herself into genteel life. Strange to say, although we had my Lord Tiptoff's word to the contrary, she insisted upon it that she and Lady Drum were intimately related, and no sooner did she read in the Morning Post of the arrival of her ladyship and her granddaughters in London than she ordered the fly before mentioned, and left cards at their respective houses. Her card, that is, R.S. Haggarty of Castle Haggarty, magnificently engraved in Gothic letters and flourishes, and ours, viz. Mr. and Mrs. S. Titmarsh, which S. he had printed for the purpose. She would have stormed Lady Jane Preston's door, and forced her way upstairs, in spite of Mary's entreaties to the contrary, had the footman who received her card given her the least encouragement. But that functionary, no doubt struck by the oddity of her appearance, placed himself in the front of the door, and declared that he had positive orders not to admit any strangers to his lady. On which Mrs. Haggarty clenched her fist out of the coach window, and promised that she would have him turned away. Yellow Plush only burst out laughing at this, and though Anne wrote a most indignant letter to Mr. Edmund Preston, complaining of the insolence of the servants of that right honorable gent, Mr. Preston did not take any notice of her letter, further than to return it, with a desire that he might not be troubled with such impertinent visits for the future. A pretty day we had of it when this letter arrived, owing to my aunt's disappointment and rage in reading the contents. For when Solomon brought up the note on the silver tea tray as usual, my aunt, seeing Mr. Preston's seal and name at the corner of the letter which is the common way of writing adopted by those official gents, my aunt, I say, seeing his name and seal, cried, "Now, Mary, who is right?" and betted my wife a sixpence that the envelope contained an invitation to dinner. She never paid the sixpence, though she lost, but contented herself by abusing Mary all day, and said I was a poor-spirited sneak for not instantly horsewhipping Mr. P. A pretty joke, indeed. They would have hanged me in those days, as they did the man who shot Mr. Percival. And now I should be glad to enlarge upon that experience in genteel life which I obtained through the perseverance of Mrs. Haggarty. But it must be owned that my opportunities were but few, lasting only for the brief period of 6 months. And also, genteel society has been fully described already by various authors of novels, whose names need not here be set down, but who, being themselves connected with the aristocracy, viz., as members of noble families, or as footmen or hangers-on thereof, naturally understand their subject a great deal better than a poor young fellow from a fire office can. There was our celebrated adventure in the Opera House, whither Mrs. H. would insist upon conducting us, and where, in a room of the establishment, called the crush room, where the ladies and gents, after the music and dancing, await the arrival of their carriages. A pretty figure did our little Solomon cut, by the way, with his big cane, among the gentlemen of the shoulder not assembled in the lobby. Where, I say, in the crush room, Mrs. H. rushed up to old Lady Drum, whom I pointed out to her, and insisted upon claiming relationship with her ladyship. But my Lady Drum had only a memory when she chose, as I may say, and had entirely on this occasion thought fit to forget her connection with the Titmarshes and Haggartys. Far from recognizing us, indeed, she called Mrs. Haggarty an Jessoman, and screamed out as loud as possible for a police officer. This and other rebuffs made my aunt perceive the vanities of this wicked world, as she said, and threw her more and more into really serious society. She formed several very valuable acquaintances, she said, at the Independent Chapel, and among others, lighted upon her friend of the rookery, Mr. Grimes Wapshot. We did not know then the interview which he had had with Mr. Smithers, nor did Grimes think proper to acquaint us with the particulars of it. But though I did acquaint Mrs. H. with the fact that her favorite preacher had been tried for forgery, she replied that she considered the story an atrocious calumny, and he answered by saying that Mary and I were in lamentable darkness, and that we should infallibly find the way to a certain bottomless pit, of which he seemed to know a great deal. Under the reverend gentleman's guidance and advice, she, after a time, separated from St. Pancras altogether and under him, as the phrase is, regularly thrice a week began to labor in the conversion of the poor of Bloomsbury and St. Giles, and made a deal of baby linen for distribution among those benighted people. She did not make any, however, for Mrs. Sam Titmarsh, who now showed signs that such would be speedily necessary, but let Mary and my mother and sisters in Somersetshire provide what was requisite for the coming event. I am not, indeed, sure that she did not say it was wrong on our parts to make any such provision, and that we ought to let the morrow provide for itself. At any rate, the Reverend Grimes Wapshot drank a deal of brandy and water at our house, and dined there even oftener than poor Gus used to do. But I had little leisure to attend to him and his doings, for I must confess at this time I was growing very embarrassed in my circumstances, and was much harassed both as a private and public character. As regards the former, Mrs. Haggarty had given me 50 l. Semicolon, but out of that 50 l, I had to pay a journey post from Somersetshire, all the carriage of her goods from the country, the painting, papering, and carpeting of my house, the brandy and strong liquors drunk by the Reverend Grimes and his friends, for the Reverend Gent said that Rosolio did not agree with him, and finally, 1,000 small bills and expenses incident to all housekeepers in the town of London. Add to this, I received just at the time, when I was most in want of cash, Madame Mantalini's bill, Messrs. Howell and James Ditto, the account of Baron von Stiltz, and the bill of Mr. Polonius for the setting of the diamond pin. All these bills arrived in a week, as they have a knack of doing, and fancy my astonishment in presenting them to Mrs. Haggarty, when she said, "Well, my dear, you are in the receipt of a very fine income. If you choose to order dresses and jewels from first-rate shops, you must pay for them, and don't expect that I am to abet your extravagance, or give you a shilling more than the munificent sum I pay you for board and lodging." How could I tell Mary of this behavior of Mrs. Haggarty, and Mary? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.